Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
It's my great honor to have one of our CLC award honorees with me today. I have Lina Green, and she is the founder of Angels of Impact. She has a diverse background, including law, technology, policy, and education, and she brings a holistic and innovative perspective to the social entrepreneurship and impact investing ecosystem. Lina started Angels of Impact in 2016 with a group of conscious entrepreneurs, and they have a vital vision of ending poverty by investing in women-led, community-based, sustainable enterprises. So far, they have worked across Asia Pacific, Singapore, New Zealand, and the US. Welcome, Lina. I'm so happy to have you today.
Thank you so much, Laurel. I really am. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, we want to shine a bright light on the beautiful work that you're doing today. But my first question is, you have such an interesting background, so I'd love to hear a little bit about your past and how you came to this work.
Okay, it's always a difficult question to start from, but I would say to a large extent, it was my upbringing that also brought me to this work, because I grew up with two parents who, even though they came from humble beginnings, always believed the need to pay it forward. So even as a child, they would drag me to children who have no parents, orphanages, you know, elderly homes, to do our little part, like sharing a birthday cake or doing something small. So in many ways, I would say that it's really been a life journey for me. But specifically, the work around Angels of Impact came out of myself being an entrepreneur also, because as you mentioned, I started off initially in law, and then I did a lot of telecom policy law. I ran an e-learning company in tech, and, you know, pretty successful. One of the first tech startups in Singapore, actually, and had difficulty raising money, you know, so I've actually faced firsthand the lived experience of the difficulty in raising money as a woman entrepreneur. And then I had an opportunity to spend 2 years in Indonesia, where I was working on digital divide issues. And then I realized that, you know, here I am, you know, a woman of color, born and raised in Singapore, living in the United States, went to Harvard University, have blah, blah, blah behind my my experiences. And I had difficulty raising money, let alone a woman, say, in Indonesia, who did not have as much access to opportunities. Although I did meet a lot of women as well in the region who, like myself, were fortunate enough to have opportunities and still ran into issues of funding. So that's how what drove me to start Angels of Impact, because it's very personal for me to bridge that gap. Yeah.
I love the story of your parents dragging you around. You know, I think there's some data around people who don't necessarily have a lot of things and a lot of money who give back. You know, I think that if we look at income levels, it's really not related to your income. It's related to your heart that give back. So I'm so excited to have you. We have a lot to talk about. And as an entrepreneur myself, and, you know, I do have, you know, a pedigree, I do have privilege, and it is hard to raise money. I mean, in this current business, I've decided not to raise money and to self-fund, because I wanted to run my business and not be raising money all the time. So talk to me about your experience and what you know about why it's harder for women to raise money. And you have the global perspective of that.
To some extent, I would say it's the success of microfinance. People have the whole area that Professor Muhammad Yunus and many others have started, right, to help fund a small woman business and therefore help to change her life. But I think that success also perpetuated the idea that women can only run small businesses, you know. So while we shifted one gap, we still haven't shifted the second gap, which is women being able to actually run bigger businesses that help support other women, for example. So that one I find is a little harder to overcome because everyone's already, the moment I mention to people that we are all about funding women, they go, oh, you're in microfinance. I'm like, no, we're not, you know? So that's that huge unconscious bias that remains. Then there's the second part of it is money and women again. So I'm now in the space of actually, you know, raising money to give money to these women. And again, there's a second whole lot of unconscious biases where the money, women have the capability of managing money. So what I found was that a lot of impact investing groups, they are willing to focus on supporting women, but they don't want to fund a woman to fund women. They don't want to fund a woman business who helps women. They usually want to help a man who's helping women. So I always struggle.
Exactly. There's layers of bias. There's layers of tradition, you know. We're what an interesting place for you to be. So how do you convince people that that doesn't make sense?
Well, it's been a slow journey to show the difference. And we do that by success stories, right? So obviously in the area of women and finance and women in tech, for example, there's a lot of other groups that are tackling this issue. And we are beginning to make progress, right? Even though the percentage that still goes to women entrepreneurs is still a lot less. What I have chosen to do is that in this phase of my life, I felt that I wanted to help those women who have even more difficulties than the privileged woman with the education, with the access, or working on tech or working in. And those are women who are tackling the issue of poverty. And so for me, I found that that's a little bit harder to do. So back in 2017, we launched a book called Sustainable Impact: Women Are Key to Ending Poverty. And Bloomberg Singapore Women's Chapter helped us launch the book. And we were very fortunate that Vin Cerf, who is the father of internet, who's at Google, happened to be in Singapore, and he gladly launched the book. And the book was basically trying to showcase faces of successful women who are in this space of community-led enterprises, poverty space, and successfully doing it and successfully impacting. You know, one was impacting 1,000 women. Another one was 50,000 farmers across it. So we were hoping that by showcasing these success stories, that we can overcome these biases. And to some extent, yes, but to a large extent, I still find people would prefer to deal with, you know, an enterprise run by a man or women dealing with tech as opposed to dealing with community or poverty related kind of businesses, because they still also have on top of all of that the unconscious bias that charity is the only way to solve poverty, and it's not, right? So the way we do it is through storytelling, and we keep showcasing these women, keep showing how it can be done. And our success story is when these women don't need us anymore. And we have so many success stories that they've gone on to get funded by other more mainstream or other impact investors, or they've increased their revenues to the point they don't need to raise money anymore. But it's a very slow process, Laurel. I just wish we could. I really, my end game was not to be needed now. I thought 10 years, you know, we're done. We're coming to our 9th year, so another 2 more years. But when every time we go back into our data, because we are very data-driven, sadly, we've made a small dent. Still a long way to go. Yeah.
So we have plenty of time today. I'd love to hear 2 stories of your, you know, people that you've helped that have gone on to build successful businesses.
Absolutely. We've got lots of stories, but I can give you one. If people have heard some other podcasts I've done, I usually talk a lot about her because she's, to me, a very interesting story. She's not someone who had privilege or came from wealth. She was actually the daughter of a weaver, and her mother wanted her to have an opportunity. So she saved up to send her to school. She runs an organization now called Color Silk, and she's based in Cambodia. So what she did was she got a degree in business, but instead of just going on to get a job or doing something else, decided to use her business skills to help her village. So her village depended on weaving. And because nobody was really buying weaving, because, you know, they had to basically compete with factory made goods coming in from China, she had to find a way to actually look for ethical consumers. So, like markets in Europe, for example, who really do appreciate organic handmade goods. When she started off and she needed to grow, she was very clever enough to get some grant money, but to grow, she needed to get herself to be credit worthy. So we've actually gone through two rounds of funding with her. And now I'm happy to say she's actually got two stores, one in Phnom Penh, one in Siem Reap, and she's doing very well. In fact, she's not dependent now on the external market. She's also got a local market buying from her. So it's a much more sustainable business that she can grow. So she's an example. Other examples would be because two things that we do, we don't just invest, we also give technical support. So the technical support is around financial literacy and financial management skills. Several organizations that started with us a long time ago and back in 2016, 2018 timeframes. One, for example, does bean-to-bar chocolates. So they actually have the entire supply chain and they work a lot with women farmers. And so at the time when we worked with them, they were still, relatively new. They had some level of branding, but they needed to grow to the next level. So in their case, what we did was we actually was able to join a group of funders to actually help to raise money for them. And they right now have become so successful that they literally do not need us anymore. You can find at one point you can every airport you went to in Indonesia, Jakarta, Bali, you would find their chocolates there. And now you can not only find the chocolates there, you come to Singapore to any grocery store and you can buy their chocolates there. And their chocolates are really delicious. So those are some two examples I can think offhand.
Tell us the names of the businesses again. The silk, weaving business is called.
Color Silk. And the one in Indonesia, the other one is called Krakakoa chocolates. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So tell me about your organization and how you work and how you solicit donations.
Thank you. Yeah. So how we work is we decided to look at where the gap was, because as you know, there's a lot of interest now around impact investing. Right. So there's a lot, actually, in Asia, there's a lot of impact investing dollars. And there was also a lot of interest around gender lens investing. So there were people who were beginning to look at funding women. So we said, okay, maybe we're not needed. Right. But so let's do a gap analysis. So we collected a lot of businesses and sat down and said, okay, what are some of the issues that you have? The key issues that popped out. That today is actually being supported, like Ande and a lot of other groups have actually written that these are, in fact, the key problems that these businesses have. What we found, which we found back then, which is number one, there's a lot of accelerator programs, there's a lot of workshops, there's a lot of conferences, but these are very lean organizations. So whatever new idea they get, they really don't have the wherewithal to put it into action. So what they really need is an extra pair of hands. So we decided when we do our technical assistance, we don't just teach them how to do it right. We actually become a part of their team and we actually help them teach them financial literacy, but actually put their books in order, get the, cash flow management systems in place, revenue projections in place. If they don't have basic accounting skills, we help to hire a local accountant to help them put all those sort of fundamentals. But of course, in the process of doing that, we also have to talk to them about their business and their strategy, because many of them often have too many business revenues that they're trying, because they're basically grappling to try to keep the organization. So we also help them look at, what they need to focus on based on their resources. And then the second part is where we come in and then give them low-cost capital. That is what the reason why we raise donation funding, because if we were getting investments from people and having to give them back the money, then we are not able to take inverted commas, what people call a risk. But to be honest, it's not a risk at all. We've had 100% repayment. It's a revolving fund and it keeps coming back so the next woman can get it. So and these are not microloans. These are, anywhere in the range of $10,000 to $110,000. So this is pretty much that particular space that we decided to focus on. And then they can actually go on to be funded by other impact funds who would now see them as credit worthy. So our goal is very clear, get them credit worthy.
I love that you actually help the entrepreneurs as you were talking. I was like, I need to, hire you guys. Because as entrepreneurs, we have a lot more ideas than we can execute. And advice when you're already busy is sometimes very difficult. So, do you have volunteers or do you pay staff to help you? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a very good question because obviously the women that we're helping are not in a position to pay us for consulting service. So that's why we call it technical assistance, because that's also where we need donations to help us to go in there. Yeah, the approach that we take really is, we ourselves are entrepreneurs. So we're entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. So we have our initial core team. We have a core group of volunteers who also volunteer with us over time. So the more we know their style of working, because for us, we have a mantra that we use: never waste the time of the social enterprise and always add value. And we find that not all volunteers necessarily have that philosophy, because the philosophy is always, oh, I have something great and I'm going to help you. And we're like, no. The social enterprise is the one who knows their business, knows the ground, knows their beneficiaries. So you come in with humility, you come in, you listen, active listening, and then you figure out how you can be a proper member of the team to help us. So we're very, very selective. We have something called the Angels Manifesto. So only when people sign on to that manifesto can they come on as an volunteer in our team. And then at times, as I mentioned to you, if the business really needs a lot of help, then we will hire local accountants or local, because we cannot help across borders. There's different accounting standards in different countries. We cannot go there and get all their ledgers and their books. So, and a lot of times there's also language issues. So we work through these three, our team, our volunteers, and experts that we hire.
And how many people is that currently? Is that a big group of people, a small number? Your team and volunteers?
Yeah, it's relatively small number, because we don't try to help a large group of people at the time. So at one point we used to have a very big team. We were around 12 to 15 people plus, we had, I think, about almost 100 volunteers and people coming and going. But then we found that because our goal was to hit the funding gap, close the funding gap, that didn't always result in that. So we found that by having a smaller pool who knew exactly how to deliver to the social enterprise, then we found that every time we gave technical assistance, we can actually give money as well. So I would say it's a modest number of people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think you're also lean, which is pretty amazing. Like you've learned from your entrepreneurs to be lean as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we want to make sure that most of the money from people who give donations actually goes to the entrepreneur as opposed to goes to the operations, because we understand that as well. Nobody wants to be paying money to someone to do work they think they could do themselves or whatever.
Yeah.
So we're quite
And
mindful of.
is that small and mighty team international? Do you have people from all over the world supporting you?
Yes, we do actually. So if people who fund us are from all over the world as well. So we have funders in Japan, Indonesia, Singapore, US, and then sometimes it's foundations. So we did get funding from the Swift Foundation, for example, here, because a lot of the work that we did was also with Indigenous women. But yeah, they are very international. And the volunteers, if we partner with corporates, which a lot of corporates actually like to partner with us, because they have something called skill-based volunteering. But what they
Right.
found is that the volunteers who volunteered with us actually came back saying it's the best volunteering they ever did. So if we have corporate partners, then obviously we would have,
Yeah, it seems like it'd be a great way to do corporate social responsibility in a really meaningful way. And
Yes.
those of you listening who want to have a meaningful corporate responsibility program, please get in touch with Angels of Impact. So amazing. So what do you see? You have 2 more years to hit your 10-year mark. If you can continue to make this work, what is the long-term vision for you from this experience?
Yeah, so definitely it doesn't look like 2 years we can retire. So the long-term view of this is obviously we want to have a bigger pool of money in the revolving fund so we can help more women, for example. The other long-term view is we actually do want to, one thing we've noticed is that while a lot of the work that we do is very helpful for the women to get them credit worthy, having a network of women entrepreneurs that they're actually learning from each other, and they're trading with each other and they are actually, doing business with each other has actually been very, very powerful. We have a term we say, once an angel, always an angel. And by the way, angels of impact, the term didn't come from just angel investors, which is what a lot of people think our name comes from. We called it angels of impact because we feel the social entrepreneur is an angel as well, giving their time and their life savings to help their community. The person who volunteers is also an angel, the corporates who come on board. So that's why we call it angels of impact. So our long-term vision is actually to have the funding to be able to build the network so that it can also grow and scale. But in a way that's sustainable, in a way that everybody benefits.
So you've had many chapters in work in your life, and I imagine you've learned a lot along the way. I'm curious about this chapter at Angels of Impact, what you've learned about yourself.
That's a very good question. I think one of the biggest challenges for me has always been, trying to overcome these biases around money that I had myself, right? So it's just my own interpretation of abundance or scarcity mentality. So it's become actually very much more mindful about these issues of how I looked at money. Because when I'm focused very much on helping the women and getting the money to them, et cetera, it's very clear for me. But I realized that I also had my own sort of like biases that I needed to deal with. So that was been my big lessons, because if you look at my background, I have a law degree, right? But and then initially I did financial law. It was a progression from going in from law to financial law to telecommunications and technology law, and then coming now to the field of finance. Even though I did financial law before, actually being a fund manager is something that I found is a new chapter of my life, a new challenge in a way. It's something that I've decided that I needed to take on. So that's a different chapter of my life.
I so appreciate that answer because I think people look at people like us, you and me, and think we have it all together, and we're still just learning. And I do believe there's a spiritual component of we get the challenge that we need to learn the spiritual lesson in. And I work with young people and older people too. And I think there's, I'm going to work every year. We do a retreat at the University of Denver. And I think they think because we're older, we have our act together, but we're really struggling with the same things that we're teaching. So as women, we need to get over our own biases around money and entrepreneurs, right? I mean, I had a conversation with a client this week. And I said, you know what? I love you, but I give you too many things. I give too many things to away for free. I need to start charging for my value. And it was a good conversation. And I wouldn't have been even to have that conversation 5 years ago.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with money is this thing called trauma around money as well. Like a lot of women, like for me, myself, for example, coming from humble beginnings, money was always an issue at home in the sense that it was usually the source of a lot of fights in the house, or just, and so that trauma is something that's at the back of my mind, right? Like even when I'm fundraising, when I'm talking to people about money, I realize that I have to very consciously and mind take that conversation out of my head, because this, and the same way when we gift money, when we have conversations about money with this women, with women entrepreneurs, we try to shift the power dynamic, because the traditional money, that power dynamic is I'm the one with money and you come pitch yourself to me. So that's another reason why I like your whole concept with compassionate leadership, because we never quite saw ourselves that way. But in many ways, it describes exactly what we do. The reason why we tell the volunteers to be humble is to shift the power dynamic. And the same way, when we have conversations around the money, we actually have to very mindfully remind the entrepreneur, you're the successful one, you're the one who needs, you tell us what you need. So each and every loan is customized according to the need. So if they are in agriculture, they need seasonal loans, for example. So if I were to just come in, nope, you have to pay monthly, blah, 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 you're actually going to create trauma. And I've known women entrepreneurs here in the United States, especially Indigenous entrepreneurs, that have even more of a trauma around, stolen land, around money, et cetera. And I've seen well-intentioned impact investors come in to give them money. and actually cause so much more trauma in the way they talk to them, in the way they give them the terms, etc. So for me, this is, yeah, you're totally right. It is actually a very spiritual journey of redefining how we look at money.
And feeling worthy. And it's such a fascinating conversation. I know for us, I mean, one of the reasons we have such a gap in the Senate and Congress and in boardrooms in this country is women tend to be really good at raising money for other people and not so good at asking money for themselves. So I feel like maybe you and I need to get together and like starting at 10-year-old girls, teaching them how to ask for money for themselves and or their own ideas. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's a big shift. You know, I've been thinking a lot about my great grandmother and my grandmother, mm-hmm. who were born into a country where they couldn't vote.
Mm. Yeah.
And women, what's going on with women today? And, you know, we're still, that was 104 years ago we got the vote. They were suffragettes in Chicago. And the cool thing is that my father, who's 96, really understands women and women's rights. And he like cried when Nancy Pelosi got the Speaker of the House. It's been 104 years, you know, or, you know, it's been 450 years. It's been, it's not an overnight thing. And what you're up to is not an overnight change.
And I'm dealing with a region, for example, where there have been women prime ministers and women presidents, right? And yet things haven't changed because there is this, it's so deeply ingrained. In fact, it's interesting for myself. My parents originally are from India. They're from this part of India called Kerala, which used to be a matriarchal society. So women actually were the ones who inherited property, et cetera, until the British came and changed everything and made it into a patriarchal society. So in many ways, my father and mother was the patriarch and the matriarch, you know, in the house, which obviously, you know, it was like both trying to be strong in a sense, right?
And talking about money.
Exactly. But I think I give that as an example that, you know, it is so multi-layered in it that it's also women who perpetuate it, right? So women play roles, and then women also say, you know, for example, the work that we do, I got invited by an organization, one of the corporates, to speak on International Women's Day. And then while I was giving my talk, one man sort of very first, he just said, oh, when are we going to have International Men's Day? And I said, every day is International Men's Day. By the way, you know, in case you forgot, that's why. But it's so ingrained that, and then I have women who come to me and say, why do you focus only on women? Like, why don't you also? And I'm like, wow, it's so deeply ingrained that you don't even see the problem.
No, I had a corporate meeting a couple of weeks ago. I didn't say this out loud, but I was thinking, because we were talking about gender equality and parity in the C-suite. It's like, could you imagine if I told you that for 250 years, there's never been a man president? What would you think? That's our experience, right?
Exactly.
Well, I so appreciate everything you're doing. I really admire the way you're doing it and the way that you continue to learn about it. We want to support you in that. But before we leave, I'd love to hear from you, for our listeners, one life lesson and one leadership lesson that you might have for us.
Yeah, I have many life lessons, so it's a bit hard to focus on one.
You can do a couple. We have time.
Yeah. So one which relates to the work that I do is I was raised to believe that poverty was something that will always be there. And there's only thing you could do is charitable work while you're in church, or, you know, whatever situation you want to be charitable and do charitable work. And so for me, when I read Professor Muhammad Yunus's book, Creating a World Without Poverty, that really shook my thing, because he's an economist, and realized that, you know, it is really man-made. Poverty has been man-made, so the solution equally can be man-made, or women, in this case, women are the solutions, right? So the biggest life lesson for me was to recognize that poverty is not something we have to live with, and that women are actually, even though the biggest victims of poverty, they're also the biggest solutions for not just poverty, also climate change. Another life lesson I would share is that, you know, sometimes you sit back and you try to focus on, okay, what do I want to do in my next 20 years, my 30 years? Who am I? Who am I going to define myself at? Just looking back at my life, I realized like life is the sum of experiences. It's life is just the total sum of every experience. If every experience you have, you fully embrace it and keep to your values, keep to the spirit of service, serving other people, then that is your life. So if I look back at all the different chapters, some people look at my chapters of my life and they go like, well, she was doing tech and then she did this and now she's doing this. She's all over the place. I'm like, no, the consistent thread for all of those was justice for me. I could not bear to see people being marginalized when there was a way out of it. So yeah, so my life lesson I would share with people is ask yourself, what is that thing that makes you very like, I'm so annoyed about, you know, whether that's women's rights or whether that is poverty or whatever it is, then have that as the consistent thread. And every experience in your life, just live that fully. And that will be the sum of your life.
Use annoyance and anger usefully.
Yes, exactly.
I love that. And what about a lesson in leadership?
Lesson in leadership, which I think very much aligns to the compassionate leaders thing, is I like to think of it as being purpose-led also. So rather, I always tell people who join the team that they're not working for me. They're working for the purpose, for the mission. Because if they're working for me, then it's like, you know, it's a very transactional thing, right? I have to do this and do that. But you leave a space in which everybody can bring forth their best to fulfill that mission. So we constantly have conversations about how do you think you can add value? Do you feel that whatever you were doing, you're frustrated about? So just creating that space for everyone to be mission aligned.
Beautifully said. Beautifully done.
Thank you.
So for our listeners that may have some extra time or treasure that they want to share, I'd highly recommend donating to Angels of Impact, or if you're the right type of humble volunteer, perhaps volunteering for them. Lina, why don't you share how they can do that and learn more?
Sure. Thank you so much for calling that out. We always are looking for like-minded supporters from a point of view of volunteers as well as funders, people who are willing to give us grants so we can set up the revolving fund. Please reach out to me at lina@angelsofimpact.com or visit our website, www.angelsofimpact.com. We have partnered in the United States with University Impact, and I can give you more information about that. It's a DAF, so if you give to us, you will get your tax exemption.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely spending time with you.
Lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And thank you so much for that award as well. It meant so much to us. Thank you.
Well, you mean a lot to us. Thank you.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeaderCircle.com.